From Maine Public Radio and MainePublic.org, I'm Jennifer Mitchell, bringing you the news on this day in Maine, Wednesday, August 2nd, 2017. And on this day, lawmakers are lingering in Augusta to decide the final fate of a number of bills, including solar, tobacco, and distracted driving. Also, a youth orchestra rocks out in Maine. Those stories are just ahead in just a moment.
This Day in Maine is made possible by listeners like you and by USM's Muskie School of Public Service Masters of Policy Planning and Management, preparing students to be a force for positive change in their communities.
The future of Maine's residential solar power industry was thrown into doubt today when lawmakers upheld Governor Paula Page's veto of a measure that supporters say aimed to stabilize the sector. Fred Bever reports.
The bill would have stalled a comparatively rapid phase-out of incentives small solar electricity generators get when they put excess energy back onto the power grid. It would also have called for an in-depth analysis of the costs and benefits of the so-called net metering program. And until recently, it looked as if the legislature was poised to override Governor Paula Page's veto. The Senate easily overrode the veto on a bipartisan vote. But recent lobbying by net metering's opponents, including Central Maine Power, succeeded in peeling off enough support in the House to make sure that the veto held. In floor debate, Representative Heather Siraki, a Scarborough Republican, quoted an op-ed by CMP's CEO, Sarah Burns.
Today, the people who invest in private solar systems earn their return on the investment by shifting millions of dollars of grid operating costs onto those who don't or can't make the same investment. That is simply not fair.
Burns' analysis has come under fire from solar power advocates. They say it wildly inflates the true size of that purported cost shift, while failing to account for financial benefits analysts say distributed energy sources such as rooftop solar arrays can create, for instance, by averting the need for some costly transmission investments. They charge that CMP's true motivation is to stop the build-out of energy sources that take homes off the grid because, simply, that means less profit for CMP. And Representative Ralph Chapman, a Brooksville Independent, noted that the veto would continue uncertainty over how the residential solar power industry will be regulated in Maine.
And the primary need that they have, and their customers and their clients, is some level of certainty as to what is going to happen. The uncertainty is more costly than a poor decision.
The veto override, which required a two-thirds majority, failed on a vote of 88-48 in the House. In the absence of new law, the residential solar sector will now be governed under rules set by the Maine Public Utilities Commission, scheduled to go into effect in January. Those rules would more quickly phase out net metering incentives while creating a new regulatory scheme that Governor Paula Page himself has condemned, which the state's public advocate found would, in the short term, cost all electricity users more money than when sticking with the old system, and which environmentalists have already filed papers to challenge in the state Supreme Judicial Court. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Fred Bever.
And for more on what the legislature's been up to today, Steve Missler has been watching the action and joins us now from the State House. So, Steve, the sun has gone down on the solar bill. What's the latest? Any final action on these high-profile bills?
Hey, Jen. So there's quite a few bills that we're keeping an eye on. The solar bill was the most high-profile of the ones that we were watching today, which was vetoed by Governor LePage last night. And clearly, as you heard from Fred, that didn't quite survive his veto. The House fell short, even though it passed it with a veto-proof threshold the first go-around. So the other ones that we're watching are a veto of a bill that would ban the use of handheld devices while driving. This is another high-profile bill, I think, but that bill just barely went down, meaning it was defeated. The Senate overrode the governor's veto of the bill, And then the House just went in and, with the support of House Republicans, sustained the governor's vetoes. The other proposal we're watching right now, it's happening as we speak, is a bill that would ban people under the age of 21 from purchasing tobacco products. You would still be able to use tobacco products if you're 18 or older if this bill were to pass, but you would not be allowed to buy those products. The governor has vetoed that bill. The Senate overrode him, and the House is set to either sustain or override him. I'm not sure how that will go. It was a very close vote the first go around, and so we're waiting to see how that shakes out. The other one that did that the legislature did override the governor was a bill that is designed in theory to increase access to opioid treatment, and more specifically, access to methadone. This proposal was vetoed by the governor. The House overrode him, pretty overwhelming margin there, and the Senate did as well. What it basically does, it would allow DHHS to increase reimbursement rates to treatment providers, which advocates for treatment say has been a roadblock for people to access treatment, and providers have who rely on MaineCare have been sort of closing down because they're not getting enough money from the state for reimbursement rates. Maine has the lowest reimbursement rates in the country. And so those are the high-profile ones that we're looking at right now. There are still some others hanging out there that aren't quite as high-profile, but that's what we're waiting for.
Any idea how those might go?
So it really is tough to tell how these will go down. Some of these bills were approved by wide margins the first time around, but, you know, with the governor, he has a block of Republican allies in the House who have proven in the past, not just this session, but in previous sessions, to be willing to flip-flop or flip their votes. And so that's that was in play today with the solar bill, where that passed with wide margins the first go-around and yet couldn't gain the two-thirds support today. And that's happened on several other bills. So it's really tough to predict how these are going to go.
So why are they even hanging out here in August? The session ended on the 4th of July.
So, yeah, this has been the session that never ends. The legislature went in officially in December and started work in earnest in January, and they were supposed to be done with their work by mid-June, but they became entangled in a budget stalemate, which led to a government shutdown, Maine's first in nearly 30 years. It was a short shutdown, and probably not that many people will remember it, but it did delay the legislature's work on a whole host of other bills, including the ones that we're dealing with today. And so today, basically, they are here, hopefully, to adjourn, but they have to deal with more than two dozen vetoes by the governor, and that's what they're dealing with now. And we just sort of highlighted the most high-profile of those bills. They could come back for a special session in autumn, But most of what they'll do then is to deal with the marijuana implementation, the legalization law, and then they'll come back in January for the second part of the regular session.
Thanks, Steve. That's Steve Missler joining us from Augusta. So there's an old joke. What do you call a viola player with a beeper? An optimist. The idea is that classically trained musicians may have a harder time getting gigs than rock or folk artists might. But there's a project in Maine that's designed to put some young orchestra musicians onto a live stage to give them a sense of what it's really like. Some say it's renewing their interest in music. Jeevan Sobrino Wheeler has our story.
Kevin Oates is directing a rehearsal of young string players in a studio overlooking Congress Square Park in Portland.
Cellos, that was on that. Can we write that down, please? Bass, play below me. Want to come in?
Oates himself was classically trained in cello at the University of Southern Maine. After graduating, he taught in public schools for 8 years while touring with local bands on the side. He says he began to realize that what he learned from playing live shows was largely missing from the typical school music curriculum.
A big part of music education in schools doesn't focus on application. It focuses on teaching the skills, focus on playing an ensemble and building community within the school, but not application outside of the school.
And so the Maine Youth Rock Orchestra, or MYRO, was born. An early idea to name the group Portland Youth Rock Orchestra, Pyro, was dropped. But the founding concept of placing teenagers on stage to play alongside touring bands stuck.
A and D together.
The collaboration process usually goes something like this. Oates reaches out to bands playing shows in Maine to see if they would be interested in sharing the stage with a group of high school students. If they are, he transcribes the band's songs for orchestral instruments, arranging them so that Myro can back the band with minimal changes to the group's stage routine. Because Myro's shows often take place in the middle of a band's tour, the two groups may not have a chance to rehearse until just hours before the show. Here's a recording of Myro performing with the Boston-based group The Ballroom Thieves. I shiver through the words I said, no warmer than the ones that never left my head. I've made an ocean of this bed, and now I beg you to starve to roll through it. Myro toured with the band last year, doing 8 shows in 9 days, from Maine to Virginia. Oates believes this is the first time that a youth orchestra has toured with a professional band in the U.S.
It was really incredible to give students that experience, like, here's what touring life's like. It's not luxurious. It's like, crammed to hotel rooms, cheap meals, and you're in a van most of the day, traveling. It's not glamorous at all, but they really embraced it. Bury me smile.
I actually used to hate viola, but after I joined Myro, it kind of made me like it again.
Noor Ahn of Portland, who has been with Myro for 2 years, says at one point she actually thought about quitting, but now embraces the challenge of performing live with a professional band.
It's just like this crazy adrenaline rush, and you know, like, I'm pretty mild-mannered when I'm like not on stage, but then I just kind of light up.
And Iris Walter, who has played cello in the group since its inception, says the common bonds these experiences generate are what keeps students coming back to Myro and engaged with orchestra music and their instruments.
Myro isn't just, like, people aren't just here to play the music. We're here, like, because we have friends here, and it's, like, a great community to play with.
For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Jeevan Sobrino Wheeler.
Bury me smile. Next to my darling, bury me deep down, bury me low.
The Maine Youth Rock Orchestra is rehearsing for an appearance with Guster on August 12th at Thompson's Point in Portland. For more of today's Maine news, visit our website, mainepublic.org. And from Maine Public, that's This Day in Maine for this Wednesday, August 2nd, 2017. Thanks to Ed Morin, Patty White, Nora Flaherty, and Keith Shortall, who helped on the show, and our digital team, of course. I'm Jennifer Mitchell.